Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Heavy by J.J. Thorne, narrated by Gabriel Vaughan. Prologue. Affinities.
"Send him in," the king demanded of his nearest servant.
Without a word, the servant ran toward the doors to retrieve the king's son. The king, William Prost, sat in his throne room, surrounded by advisors and servants. Each of them remained silent as they waited for the king's son to enter the room. Anticipation was heavy in the room as everyone knew what was about to happen. The doors opened, and a boy walked in. The boy walked with his hands at his sides and his head directed forward. His back was straight as he walked into the room with confidence. His hair was long and brown, similar to his father's at that age. He was short, but at 16 years old, he knew he was expected to grow. His clothing was well kept and especially regal for the day's ceremony. Emmett Prost, the crown prince, walked to the steps leading to his father's throne. He stopped before ascending and addressed his father.
"Father, has the priest arrived to begin the ceremony?"
The king looked at his son with a wide smile.
"Crown prince, I would ask you to remember that you must refer to me as the king while we are in my chambers. You will one day inherit the throne. At that time, you must teach your own children the responsibility and propriety that comes with the title."
The smile on Emmett's face fell slightly as he acknowledged the king's words.
"You are right, my king. My apologies. I meant no disrespect."
The king started to laugh.
"Prince, let us not sully the day. A small mistake was made, nothing more. Today is a joyous day that will not be tarnished by such trivial issues."
The king looked to his advisors.
"Francis, has the priest arrived yet?"
"Yes, your majesty. The priest is downstairs, waiting for you and your son to arrive."
The king, now irritated, looked at his closest advisor.
"Where is he?"
Francis cleared his throat.
"In the private church, sire. He is waiting for you and your son to arrive."
"For me to arrive? Why has he not come to ask for my attendance directly? Does he expect that I can be summoned like a common servant in my own home? I am the king, Francis. That man will come to me directly. I will not be treated as a servant in my own kingdom."
A separate advisor took a step forward.
"My king, the priest would have this done in the private church you have downstairs. He has stated that the ceremony must happen near a place of worship, so that the goddess might see the ceremony." "I will not repeat myself again, Howard, regardless of how many of you attempt to go against my wishes. Bring the priest to my quarters immediately. Tell him that he should come prepared to hold the ceremony here. Otherwise, he will see a large cutback in gold being sent to the church. But at this point, even that would be a kindness. I will not be disrespected again. Go now!"
One of the servants started to make his way toward the doors as everyone watched the king speak down to his advisors. The servant had almost reached the door before the king raised his voice again.
"No, not you. Return to your position. Francis and Howard will fetch the priest. They are so keen to tell me his wishes, they can do just as well letting him know mine."
The king spoke clearly, making sure no person was unaware of his intentions. The two advisors chose not to protest as they walked to the doors. Everyone else in the room remained silent as they waited for the priest to arrive. The king broke the silence again, addressing his son. Emmett stood by the steps of the throne, his hands now behind his back, awaiting directions from his father.
"While we wait on the priest, we may as well start the proceedings. Have you had any thoughts on which type of affinity you would like to receive, my son?"
"My king, I would be honored to receive any affinity. I recognize that with diligence and patience, I will be able to rise to great heights with any affinity. Should we not wait for the priest so that this can be done formally?"
Yes, you are correct, my son, and I believe you have the aptitude to master any affinity. With that said, this is a celebration. Let us be braggarts for a moment. Who needs the priest? I have taken the test myself, and it was a trifling thing. Do not worry. If you could choose any affinity, which would you select? At my ceremony, we made a game of guessing what I might get. I guessed incorrectly, but it was my mother who guessed it the closest. The woman called herself an oracle until her dying days. The king began to laugh. Everyone in attendance laughed as well.
A royal affinity was a true achievement, my king, Emmet said, as though the goddess herself approved of your appointment as king. That is what my tutors tell me, at least.
Yes, my father was happy to have raised such a regal child, even if it meant his time on the throne was limited. As you know, the affinity was unheard of, but I was able to use it to conquer countless dungeons and battlefields.
Emmet acknowledged his father with true respect. He had grown up learning about his father's ambitions and triumphs. In his youth, the royal affinity had manifested skills truly fit for a king, skills that he would use to bring the kingdom of Prost great prosperity.
I would be overjoyed to receive the same affinity, but as I said, I would be just as content to receive the more common sword affinity. I know I could do many great things.
Emmet and his father continued back and forth until the doors opened again. It had only been 10 minutes since they had left, but the two advisors, Francis and Howard, walked into the throne room with the priest following close behind. In his hand, he held a cloth bag and nothing else.
Wonderful. Come closer, priest.
The king waved him forward.
I heard you had tried to go against the wishes of the kingdom. Thankfully, it seems you have come to your senses.
The two advisors found their spots to the side of the king as the priest stood beside Emmet at the bottom of the steps.
Nothing of the sort, Your Majesty. As you know, it is a tradition that the ceremony is held within the church's back chambers. Very few people are permitted in those quarters.
Yes, priest, but we had spoken about having it here. The crown prince is old enough and will not wait like all of the other children.
Yes, Your Majesty, but that is why I have prepared everything in the private church here. The goddess does not have a place in these chambers.
That is where you have it wrong, priest. The goddess is always with me in my chambers. This place is just as holy as any room of your church. The goddess and I have a true connection that you would do to remember. I am your king.
The priest lowered his head and did not respond.
Good. Now, moving forward, I forgive you and your behavior. Do you have everything you require to perform the ceremony right here, now?
The priest raised his head slightly, but only to face the torso of the king.
Your Majesty, I have brought the goddess's statue here, but I would at least ask that the ceremony remain private. There are too many witnesses, and I worry that this will cause issues.
Fine. Everyone except the priest and the crown prince, leave the chambers now. Francis and Howard, you may also remain. I take it there will be no additional arguments, priest?
The king dismissed the rest of the room. As the parade of servants and advisors left the room, the king stared squarely at the priest's head.
No, Your Highness. This should suffice.
The priest lifted the cloth bag from the floor and produced a large statue of a woman's body. The woman was nearly naked, wearing only a silk robe, with what appeared to be a perfect body and frame. The woman's face held no expression, and her eyes were closed. Otherwise, the stone statue looked plain in comparison to the gold and jewelry that littered the king's chambers. The priest set the statue down on the steps directly in front of him and Emmet. The priest took a step back, grabbed Emmet's shoulder, and turned him facing his direction.
The priest's voice had some slight hesitation as he started to speak to Emmett directly, starting the ceremony.
My prince, the goddess has seen it fit to bring you into this world, and with that she has provided you with free will, understanding, and goodness. Would she—
Stop! What are you doing? The king yelled.
Your Majesty, this is the same text read out to every child once they come for their test. I am going through the same ceremony I would take for any other child.
Exactly. You forget yourself again, priest. My son is not any child. He is my child, and I do not need you to spend 5 minutes dragging this on any further. He and I have already spent the last 10 minutes discussing his future affinity. He is ready. Skip to the end, so that we might move on to something else.
The priest and Emmett both stood, shocked, at the front of the steps. After a few moments, the priest regained his nerve and moved ahead with the ceremony.
My prince, please put your hand on the statue of the goddess, so that she may grant you your affinity.
Emmett nodded and edged his hand toward the statue. A heaviness had once again taken over the chambers as he reached his hand out. His fingers brushed the shoulder of the goddess, and he waited. Emmett had discussed this countless times with his tutors and knew that at this time he would begin to see text in his vision. The text would announce the affinity he had received, the affinity he would use to learn skills and rank up for the rest of his life. Emmett waited, but nothing appeared. He opened his eyes, but despite his best wishes, nothing appeared. Emmett started to grasp at all the parts of the statue, wondering if he had somehow touched the wrong part of the goddess's figure. His father chuckled.
Ha ha! I know you're excited, son, but don't go feeling up the goddess in front of a priest. Now let us have it. What affinity did you receive?
The king looked towards his son, who had now stopped touching the statue.
There's nothing. I see nothing.
Emmett collapsed onto the steps, looking towards his father, tears streaming down his face.
What do you mean, nothing? Priest, what have you done? Why does my son not see his affinity?
The priest started to sweat profusely.
My king, I do not know. As you know, most children do not receive an affinity. This could just mean that the crown prince is one of those children.
Priest, I will have your head if you continue to spout such blasphemy in my chambers. The crown prince is intended to take over the throne. He must have an affinity. There must have been a mistake. You will do the test again, in your back room chamber at the church. You will make sure it is done correctly this time. You will not make any mistakes again. Am I clear?
Your Majesty, doing the test again has never produced a different result.
I am not asking. I am your king. You will go now, or I will send you to your goddess this very instant. Am I clear?
The king stood from his throne. His body began to take on a shimmer of gold as he enhanced his body with his skills and internal energy. The king, who had just looked like a frail old man, stood atop his dais like a god looking at ants. The priest's legs collapsed as he could no longer hold himself up.
Yes, my king, I will do as you have asked. Come, my prince.
Emmett looked up for the first time as well, his eyes bloodshot from his tears. The prince and priest put the statue back into the bag and left the chambers.
Francis, go with them, the king growled. Make sure it goes well, for your sake and his.
Francis followed directly after them. After the doors closed, the king dismissed his skill and took his seat on the throne once more.
Howard, bring all of the advisors to my chambers as soon as we receive a response from Francis.
Yes, sire.
Howard walked out of the room as well. The king sat still on his throne and waited. 2 hours later, the king's advisors returned.
"Repeat what you've told me," he ordered.
Francis stepped forward to address the king and the other advisors.
"The priest has conducted the affinity test on Crown Prince Emmett 3 times. Each time, he has had the same result. The Crown Prince has not received an affinity."
The advisors began to murmur to themselves as they registered the news. The king sat still, his gaze hard as flint. Eventually, one of the advisors stepped forward to speak.
"My king, several kingdoms have been run by monarchs without an affinity. The Crown Prince is smart and will preserve your legacy, even without an affinity."
The advisors all nodded in agreement.
"What a foolish thought," the king snorted. "My legacy may only be preserved by power. We have enemies to the south who attack constantly, and dungeons that require constant vigilance. That is only possible with a strong leader."
The advisors stopped, waiting.
"There is only one way to fix this," the king said. "First, kill the priest. No one else must know about this. No doubt he has already told someone else. Make sure they are also discarded."
The advisors looked at each other before Francis indicated for another advisor to leave immediately to complete the orders. As the advisors left the chambers, the king continued,
"We all know what must be done. We must retrieve a dungeon core. Do we have any in our possession?"
Howard shook his head.
"No, Your Majesty. The last dungeon core we had was traded away 15 years ago to reclaim our position in the Southern Isles."
The king growled but did not comment.
"What about any of our existing dungeons?"
"My king, we cannot risk taking a core from any of our own dungeons. Each of the known dungeons are too close to a settlement of our own. If we take the core, the town will be wiped out. Thousands will die."
"Yes, I know what would happen. Do not patronize me, Howard. None of you are coming up with ideas, so I must. This is my only male heir. He must have an affinity."
Howard stepped back as another advisor took his place.
"My king, my informants have mentioned that our neighbor in the south has recently gotten hold of a dungeon core. If so desired, we might be able to take hold of theirs through a barter."
"Ha! Barter for what? The kingdom itself? Territory? No, we cannot barter with those fools, and we do not have the resources to attack them directly."
The king took a moment to consider his thoughts again.
"What about the wastelands? Could we send a team into there to retrieve one of those cores?"
The advisor stepped back, dejected, as Howard stepped forward again.
"No, sire. We have been tracking the wastelands, and of the dungeons we are monitoring, we have at least 2 years remaining until a core will become available. And even then, an expedition into the wastelands would take years. The landscape has been completely overrun by monsters."
"Then what would you have me do, Howard? The prince is 16 now. We must not show any weakness to our enemies. There must be a solution, and each of you is simply not thinking hard enough."
Another advisor stepped forward. His hair was black and his features pointed.
"There might be one way that has not yet been addressed."
"Howard, who is this man? I have never seen him before."
"This is Clyde, Your Majesty. He joined recently and has provided invaluable information ever since. I stand behind his word."
"Okay, Clyde, those are strong words. Do not let Howard down. What is this alternative?"
"My network tells of a new dungeon discovered on the border of your kingdom and the wastelands, in between your kingdom and the kingdom to the south. The dungeon is located in uncontested territory. No kingdom has claimed this land because nothing was previously there. My information mentions that the dungeon is likely rank B, more than capable of producing a core worthy of your son."
"Howard, does Clyde speak the truth?
Is there uncontested land between my kingdom and the wastelands? Howard looked to Clyde.
I would need to look at the information to be sure, but I believe his words.
Okay, then this seems promising. The king began to smile. Do we know anything about the dungeon? If we are going to these lengths, I would wish for a strong affinity at least.
Yes, sire. The monsters within are all based on sand. The dungeon manifested itself as a desert.
A more specialized form of earth would be a good affinity for Emmet. The king rubbed his chin. You've convinced me. Make it so.
There is one thing, sire, that you should be made aware of.
What is it, Clyde? You have already made your opinions known. You should know when to stop.
Yes, sire, but this must be brought to your attention as well. The dungeon is located in uncontested territory, but it has shown up beside a fairly large town. Any survivors that were previously in the wastelands have now taken refuge in this location. The population has swelled as they needed to leave their previous homes. They are calling it Newtown for now, in honor of their discarded past.
Clyde stepped back, finished with his statement. You have confirmed that they are not within my kingdom? Clyde nodded. Okay, then they are not my responsibility. We will move forward with this plan. They have started a new life once before and are capable of doing so again. We will attempt to find a dungeon core among our trading partners in the kingdom. If we are not able to find something as promising as the Sand Affinity Core, then we proceed on this new dungeon. And, Howard, I will not have this fail. We will send our best dungeon divers to retrieve the core. Do not let anything stand in our way.
Of course, Your Majesty.
Perfect. We move forward on the retrieval of a core for the Crown Prince.
Francis stepped forward quickly. My king, I must caution you. You are valuing your son's affinity over the lives of thousands of people. Should we not consider another option?
Francis, I have tried thinking of other options. You all, my advisors, had none. Should there be any survivors in Newtown after the dungeon collapse, they will be able to pledge their loyalty to the Prost Kingdom afterwards. I will offer them this courtesy. Otherwise, yes, Francis, I value the future of my kingdom over the lives of people who are not within it. Now, you have your orders. You are dismissed.
Chapter 1. The Weight of It All. He stalks toward me with a level of confidence only seen in some high-ranking dungeoneers. His level of swagger is only accentuated by the fact that this party is another way to celebrate his latest achievement, getting first place at the prep school's first-year tournament. First, he determined that he would defy the odds by gaining an affinity, which less than half of all people in the world get. Then, by the grace of the goddess, he was granted a rare affinity, ice. If I didn't know better, I would think the goddess was making a joke about his ability to be cold-hearted and defy any warmth that could be exuded by him and his ilk. But I do know better than that. He has proven that he is a master of trickery on top of his affinity for ice. He has shown everyone else in town a level of respect and grace that would have made the High Priest himself blush. A prodigy within our family, and heralded throughout Hwaag as the person who will put our little town on the map, Dungeon Diver. Everyone knows ice, like all the elemental affinities, is sought after and powerful. And for all I, or anyone else knows, he might have gotten the affinity because he threw a snowball when he was 12. My perpetual tormentor, my mortal enemy, my cousin, John.
Hey, Terence, Elise.
John called as he arrived at my father's table. At this point, my mother and father were in a heated discussion with my Uncle Tom about an upcoming dungeon dive in the north. If I knew my parents, they were trying to talk him out of it, yet again.
Who knows? Maybe he won't go this time. I'm kidding, of course. We all know he's going on the dungeon dive.
Hey, John,
Elise answered, before elbowing me in the side. Hey, I responded, rubbing my bruised rib. Can you believe the amount of effort my mother has put into this party? You would think that I cleared a rank B dungeon and came back with its core with the number of people she invited. John sat down in my mother's chair. Did you both see my win over Mr. Lamppost in the finals?
Yes, you were amazing, John.
Elise beamed at him.
I was so worried for you because Lance had used his light affinity to blind all of his opponents before you. But then you, I would never have thought that you would create a small patch of ice on the ground to trip him. I can't believe he fell for that.
Elise was a huge fan of our cousin. She was too young to have seen John's constant abuse when we were younger. His ice affinity had been the topic of many dinner conversations, and gaining an affinity of her own was all Elise could think about. John waved away the praise.
Well, it was simple, really. Once he tripped, it was a trivial matter to finish the match.
When I grow up, I hope to get something cool like your ice powers.
Elise spent a lot of time thinking about affinities, despite only being 13. She knew she was still years away from her own test, and even then, the odds she would get one were incredibly low.
Well, Elise, I think we should worry about your brother here first. So, Terence, what affinity do you think you'll be able to get? I haven't heard of an eating affinity yet, but I bet the goddess will smile down on you and grant you this most awesome power. I can see it now. Terence, the eater. He who commands his awesome power of eating to chew on the dungeon inhabitants until they submit.
John erupted into a fit of laughter. At this point, I had dealt with John's torment for years, so I didn't rise to the bait. This was a family party, after all, despite his best efforts to make me mad.
I don't know, I said. No one does. I'll just try my hardest and hope that the goddess grants me an affinity.
Oh, you're no fun, Terence. I see you've started to lose some weight, and I'm so proud of you. I remember spending all our time together as kids playing tag. You were always so slow. But we always made sure to involve you in our fun. You see, I've been trying to help you lose weight for years. You're only just catching up to the rest of us now.
Damn, and here I thought being chased around the town with sticks was something all cousins did to bond.
I guess we both had the same goal all along.
Yes, Terence, I guess we did,
John said as he plastered on his biggest smile.
Well, I'll be getting back to the rest of the party now. I am the star of the show, after all. Good luck, little cousin, in this year's affinity test. Remember, most don't receive any affinity at all, so if you get nothing, you can always continue the noble profession of counting coins like your mother. With the amount I plan to go dungeon diving, I'll need a master counter of my own. I'll make sure to keep you in mind for the job.
With that, John walked back into the crowd of people. It took a few more minutes, but Elise finally came back from her own world of wonder. When she did, her first words were reminiscent of someone who only hears what they want to hear.
Do you think the goddess would really give an eater affinity? I bet you could become the best chef in the world with something like that.
Yes, Elise, I bet you could. The rest of the party went by without a hitch. Our parents finally came to the table, and I was even able to enjoy myself a bit. Everyone took the opportunity to wish me luck in the upcoming ceremony, but that was a formality at this type of event. My parents weren't nobles, nor were they wealthy, but my mother had a natural magnetism that caused others to like her. As a result, she kept busy enough in her bookkeeping services. As it turns out, both dungeon divers and regular people needed someone to manage their money. Even though dungeon divers brought in more money, I had never seen her turn down anyone. I once asked her why. She said,
"If I turned down others like myself, what example would I be giving you and your sister? Dungeon divers make the most money, and they might even protect us from monsters. But it's the janitor and hairdresser down the street that keep our town running, while dungeoneers get to gallivant."
My father...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?